And I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've been doing from CDC and other things that have been going on to advance accreditation and just how much this, we think, is showing that accreditation is playing a role in transforming public health, or we're really on the cusp of doing so. And as we've already said, we have no relationships to disclose. But I wanted to first start with a brief kind of overview of the role that we've played in accreditation support. We have, of course, played, and I want to acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, too. Pamela Russo couldn't be here today, but they have been a partner with us and co-funder for the work that FAB has done in building and launching and continuous improvement and evaluation of the national program. But both RWJ and CDC have played different roles in trying to, of course, foster and support other initiatives that have played a role in serving and supporting accreditation or quality improvement or performance management or these many, many other concepts that are just so important for success in accreditation. So we, of course, have been supporting some of the different national partner organizations. APHA is one, of course, you all know that acronym, ASTO, NACHO, the National Indian Health Board, some of these organizations that play such key roles serving the very health departments that are the main target, so to speak, of accreditation. And those organizations play really important roles in technical assistance, educational resources, trainings. One thing that we've done through those organizations is support accreditation support initiatives. Those are just small little grants that we've been able to provide that go to health departments and has really been able to show what a little bit of money can do to really move the needle in different health departments. But one of the big things, and as I talk and describe some of the ways and trends that we've seen and how accreditation has been transforming public health. A lot of what we've seen has been because of also what we've done to foster this work through the National Public Health Improvement Initiative. How many of you are familiar with NIFI, this work? Okay, I was assuming, I was seeing some familiar faces, so assuming that we were going to have some familiarity in the room, and that of course was of what was supposed to be a 5-year initiative, but was a 4-year initiative. We had 73 grantees, also, of course, supported the Performance Improvement Managers Network, so the establishment of Performance Improvement Managers, or PIMS, in these grantees. And so what I've done through here is I'm going to scatter some data and information about what we've learned from NIFI as I speak to you. And I'll also talk about incentives and how we've also see this as connecting to the daily life of public health. But if we're talking about transforming public health and what accreditation is doing, I think the key question is, well, what are we transforming from? So I looked back at some of the initial goals that we had when we were first starting to talk about accreditation. And some of you, I know, in the room, remember these conversations going back even further. And I remember some of the work going on in different states, but really I think this work began in earnest in 2004, 2005, when there were some national discussions of should we even proceed with this? And there were some goals that were identified, certainly reducing that variation that occurs across from health department to a health department. I think we said many a time we want to not have that phrase, if you've seen one health department, you've seen one health department, and really get to the point where everyone could have some level of expectation from their state or local health department or tribal health department. But there was always an intention of using accreditation as a means to drive quality improvement or performance improvement, and not looking at this as a compliance program. And so there were certainly quite a few conversations during those early days about where do we set the bar? Do we set it really low and have this be more of a basement of saying this is what you can expect from every health department regardless of what they are? Stretch, are these gold standards? And really I think FAB hit the, and the committees and the board hit the right note with setting these standards as stretch standards But they are stretch standards that even some of the high-performing health departments have to really work towards. Of course, improving accountability and transparency, but really, all in all, we were looking at this as something that had the potential to transform public health. Our colleagues at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation also supported Dr. Glenn Mays, many of you know Glenn, and doing some research and looking at what we could learn from accreditation in other sectors. And we basically learned that, they all had different reasons for starting their own accreditation programs. And of course, that often reflected what different stakeholders or sponsors wanted. But there often wasn't a lot of evidence that started this work, but that incentives, of course, could be very important, regardless of whether it was, in terms of especially voluntary accreditation. So this really resonates looking back at this now. And this is, of course, a very Glenn-like quote, limited but encouraging evidence, but basically saying, yeah, this is worth going forth with. And so since that time, there has been, of course, considerable work. It's been the life work of many of us to really get into the development and testing and now the launch. And now, of course, Kay shared the numbers that FAB has in terms of those in the queue or those that are already accredited. And where are we? What does this mean in terms of how accreditation either is already or has the potential to transform public health? And so what I did is I like my lists. I'm a big list person, and Kay's nodding very vigorously, like my little framework. So I came up with the top ways accreditation has the potential or is already transforming public health. I do not have 10, I have 7. I suppose I could have said the super 7 or something like that. So this is not the top 10 ways, this is the 7. So number one, that changes in public health drive changes in standards and vice versa. You already heard a bit from Jessica in terms of how the FAB standards from version 1.0 to 1.5 have evolved. And that really, of course, especially focused on changes in some fast-moving areas like informatics, health equity, and workforce development, I think, was another big area. We already know that there has been a tremendous amount of work in quality improvement and performance management, and that there's certainly, especially because of the ACA, an awful lot going on in terms of health transformation and public health and healthcare intersection. This all reflects these topics and more, and again, this continues to be your teaser for when we get into some of the discussion, that is trajectory of changes that FAB standards need to continue to reflect to stay current and relevant. But likewise, by putting those in the FAB standards, we're really driving changes in public health. And as you'll see, FAB is also, and you'll hear about it a little bit more, Jessica already mentioned this, FAB's already thinking about, well, what does this mean for some of those different cuts of applicants or potential applicants, like the smaller rural health departments or tribes and territories, where the pickup hasn't been as quick because they're just in a very different starting place. So how do we best reflect that? Two, thinking along that same lines, accreditation and the standards serve as a roadmap or blueprint for health departments. So this has been true, and as we've talked to folks in the field and some of our grantees, we see that this is so true even for those that say, well, we have really no intention of applying for accreditation for quite some time. But the national standards really play an important role in helping our health department understand what we need to be paying attention to or what we need to work on. I know we've heard from health directors, especially new state or local health directors, who are really wondering, okay, well, what is it that I need to focus on? That the accreditation standards really help as a blueprint for this. And certainly we've seen a lot of growth and activity around some of the areas that are some of those key standards. So I like to characterize that as this is really helping health departments do the right things, focusing on what you need to do, and doing things right. So if you're going to do a community health assessment, make sure it's a comprehensive community health assessment and that there's involvement of partners and especially, of course, the opportunity to link with your hospital and their CHNA activities. So there's an opportunity to really ensure that health departments across the nation are doing public health in the way that they should. We used the FAB standards as a really key area and focus for what we wanted our NIFI grantees to do. So I promised you a little bit of data, so that helps to show. So what we did was we actually highlighted the prerequisites, the community health assessment, community or state health assessment, community or state health improvement plan, and the agency strategic plan as areas that we wanted grantees to focus as part of the accreditation readiness activities. And so one of the, okay, this is someone else who really likes animation helped to do this. So as you can see, by the end of the, this is just at the beginning of, or early part of year three to the end of year four, just that kind of progress that was made in terms of the completion of the prerequisites. That purple line on the bottom are those grantees that had not done any of the prerequisites, and you can see how that went down to around 10%. And those that, of course, had that have completed all three prerequisites went up. So that kind of progress, even for health departments that are saying, yeah, we're not going to apply for accreditation for a while, to see that kind of attention to having a health assessment and having a health improvement plan and a strategic plan and knowing those FAB standards exist and telling them exactly what that should look like, I think that's really invaluable for what our public health system needs to look like. We also asked our NIFI grantees, required our NIFI grantees to do an organizational self-assessment against the FAB standards and measures. And so basically we took the FAB standards and we said, we asked them to indicate, you know, whether they thought they had met the standard or not, and if they were doing work to address that. And part of this was, of course, to get them to really look at the FAB standards and take a good look at understanding these are what national peer-developed standards look like and for health departments that they really should be paying attention to regardless. But also, for those NIFI investments, the investments of funds that came from our cooperative agreement, that helped them to pinpoint some opportunities where they had gaps and where they could be making some improvements. So from that, of course, we saw that 86% of awardees were able to do that self-assessment, and that 77% of those awardees closed gaps for at least one standard. Now, of course, we use that information to understand, okay, well, what does that look like in terms of the big areas of strengths and weaknesses? It is not a surprise to see that in terms of those organizational self-assessment results, and granted that was a fairly quick and dirty process for some grantees, we are aware. The three standards that were at the bottom of the list in terms of those that were least frequently met, or top of the list for least frequently met, were those that relate to the workforce development plan, having a performance management system, and having QI processes and a QI plan. So that is not a surprise. Which brings me to my next point, or my number three way, in my super seven, I'm gonna call it, that accreditation is advancing quality improvement and performance management. You heard an awful lot from Jessica already in terms of FAB's internal and external evaluation results, showing that accredited sites, at least, are seeing that this has value. But I think we've seen it, too, from beyond those that are participating in accreditation formally through the EFAB system, that there hasn't just been a tremendous amount of work and attention to quality improvement. I think that the landscape has really changed out there. In addition to asking them to look at those prerequisites and the organizational self-assessment, we did ask our NIFI grantees to pay attention to quality improvement and to implement at least one QI initiative. And we also, and I think this is a really cool outcome of what we were able to do with NIFI that really adds to the public health landscape, is our evaluators at CDC work to develop a framework to evaluate the impact of those quality improvement projects. So they came up with a really neat framework that identifies either efficiency or effectiveness measures or metrics for QI initiatives. And using that, we were able to determine that of the all but one grantee that implemented a QI initiative, 89% were able to demonstrate measurable results, and most made what were tangible improvements in either efficiency or effectiveness. But of course, our NIFI grantees are not all of the public health system. And so I wanted to also highlight this data from the NACHO profile, which just shows, even from 2010 to 2013, how use of QI has really grown among local health departments. And you can see the tan on this set on this left side has really grown from 15 to 23% for those that are involved or feel like they have formal agency-wide QI, and 30 to 33% for those that have formal QI in specific program areas. So now that we're up to almost 60% of health departments, of local health departments, which, you know, there's some real diversity out there, that really feel that they either have formal agency-wide QI or formal QI in specific areas. And I, for one, am looking forward to the next NACHO profile, which I think will continue to show this trajectory of change. Number four, accreditation builds the foundation for the programs that make up what I refer to as the daily life of public health. This has been an area, right from the beginning, we've been interested in from CDC especially, because as folks are aware, we tend to be a little categorical, just a little. And that tends to, of course, be because that's how our funding comes to us, that we do make most of our investments through categorical, or most of our funding goes out through categorical investments. And of course, that's how state and local health departments work in terms of setting up the programs and initiatives that can really make an impact on public health or on the public's health. And so really, how can those programs and services be reflected in the FAB standards? And of course, how can we look at those funded programmatic activities in a way that helps to meet the FAB standards? So that's something that we've really been interested in, developing that mutually reinforcing role. One way I wanted to share, that we have worked with, and I say we, the global we, FAB's been part of this, they've sponsored numerous think tanks on these topics. We've worked with colleagues within CDC on this, but there have been some different outreach and dialogues and crosswalk work, et cetera, think tanks, as I mentioned, to really explore how those connections exist. And those that have stars next to them, that means there's either a crosswalk that's been developed or in progress, to really highlight, okay, this is where, if you're an occupational safety and health coordinator in your health department, and we worked with our colleagues at NIOSH, this is how that work that we're funding through NIOSH, you know, plays a role in the FAB standards. Same with environmental, public health, preparedness. That actually, there's a crosswalk, actually fairly in-depth crosswalk, with the FEP capabilities, and NACHO has also done one with Project Public Health Ready. So some of these actually reflect more than one crosswalk. Kay also mentioned the Foundational Public Health Services. I just realized that should be listed up there because there are more than one crosswalk that relates to that, both macro and then at the detailed level. But as I mentioned, because that's how we do our investments at CDC, we want to make sure that those investments can be leveraged. One of the things that we've done is we've included language about accreditation and what we refer to as our standard FOA, or Funding Opportunity Announcement, guidance. And so in every FOA that goes out, domestic non-research FOA especially, particularly, there's a section in there in the budget narrative guidance piece that indicates that applicants may, if consistent with the statutory authority, use funds for activities to meet national standards and or seek health department accreditation through FAB. So this is very specifically about FAB accreditation. There's a fact sheet on that, where we also continually keep it updated with the FOAs that include this language. We also are including it at times in the organizational capacity section, where applicants can indicate their activity or status as it relates to FAB accreditation. As you're aware, or many of you are aware, the NIFI grant went away, or the NIFI cooperative agreement has ended, and in fact, September 30th marked even the end of our no-cost extension year. So we are truly in our wrap-up phase. But OSTILTS, where I sit at CDC, we now are the home for the Preventive Health and Health Services Block Grant. And that, of course, is fairly flexible funding, where those block grantees really determine what it is that is there are their needs for the use of those funds. But we do know that the public health infrastructure topic area, and block grantees use those healthy people topic areas as a way of reporting where they're doing those funding allocations. The public health infrastructure topic area is actually at the top of the list in terms of the greatest resource allocation. And that includes those that are using it for the accreditation-related objective, community health improvement-related objective, assessment, and of course there's workforce development and information systems-related objectives in there as well. So Pat Libby and Jim Franco, I see you in this room, and I couldn't have planned this better, because my point number five is that accreditation is fostering cross-jurisdictional sharing and cross-level collaboration. And I was going to acknowledge those two even if they weren't here, because it's actually thanks to them that we have this, I think, really useful spectrum of what cross-jurisdictional sharing arrangements could look like. That really on the left, left side, that's really, you know, the working together, even in informal ways. And then moving over to the right, sharing of staff or sharing of services, all the way, of course, to the right end, where there are health departments that are looking over or looking at new public health structures, either regionalizing or consolidating. It's important to note this is a spectrum, not a continuum. There's no expectation that health departments move from left to right. But I think we have seen, and this is an area CDC is very interested in too, we have a recommendation from our advisory committee to the CDC director that really emphasized fostering cross-jurisdictional sharing. I think we've seen that certainly accreditation has played a major role in getting health departments to think about how do we need to work together to do that community health improvement plan, or how do we need to work together to do these services in ways that make the most sense. From NIFI, even though we did have just 73 grantees, we also saw that NIFI support really did reach other public health agencies. And in fact, so this, I don't know how well you can see the numbers here, but these were some of the main areas where NIFI support was targeted: accreditation readiness, performance improvement and quality improvement, and performance management. And that top line is what accreditation readiness is. And you see that far bubble that says 697, and that's the number of local or tribal public health agencies that receive direct support from a state NIFI grantee or a tribal consortia or whatever it might be that was a direct NIFI grantee that relates to fostering accreditation readiness. So we saw that in quite a few states this helped to build the statewide collaboration and that learning community and the peer sharing that needs to happen to really make accreditation a success. Number six, accreditation is helping to build the evidence base for public health while also fostering the use of evidence-based practice. So certainly, for those of you familiar with the accreditation standards, you know that there's a pretty big emphasis in there, and particularly in Domain 10, to use evidence-based interventions, or at least promising practices. We've done some work looking at accreditation standards and the Guide to Community Preventive Services, and to see where interventions within that may play a role in helping health departments and others meet standards. And certainly, the data-driven expectations. You know, performance management, that's using data to drive better public health. I mean, this is This is all about evidence-based practice. But of course, we think accreditation is also playing a role in building that practice-based evidence, getting health departments to share more what they're doing, whether through PHKICS or through NIFI or by publicizing or publishing what they're doing. And then that final point, of course, relates to what I know a lot of researchers are excited about, and that's, of course, the fact that the data from FAB, the data about accredited sites, represents, you know, a future, probably, gold mine of information about what our public health, our governmental public health system looks like. Number seven, and this is my final point, and I wanted to make this my final point purposefully because I think this segues nicely into where there could be some interactive discussion, and that's that support and incentives can and do need to make the difference. We are asked constantly at CDC, and I know others are too, what kind of incentives exist for accreditation. And so even though this is a lot of words on one slide, I wanted to squeeze this all in to one PowerPoint slide, because I think this is a nice little quick at-a-glance list for some examples of current incentives, both on the left side for accreditation preparation and on the right side for accreditation status. Now, there has been a lot of emphasis on incentives for accreditation preparation to date. Obviously, we wanted, you know, with the program just being launched several years ago, NIFI, the accreditation support initiatives, thinking about what technical assistance and tools are needed, the role that, you know, many states have played and associations have played in building those learning communities. I mean, that's huge. That has, I think, fostered a lot. But we're now getting to that point with 300 and, did you say 41 or 42 in the system, okay? With 341 in the system or accredited, those numbers are put us at a tipping point and over 30 states that are in the system. So we are being asked, of course, those sites that have been accredited for a few years are especially asking, you know, what's in it for me to have that accreditation status? Certainly you get a really pretty plaque from FAB. That's great to put on your wall and can talk about how you're accredited. We recognize you too from CDC. Dr. Frieden and Dr. Monroe send you a really nice letter. And we include that information on our website. How many of you have ever heard of the STAR Community Rating System? I see some hands. So that's something that NACO and the U.S. Conference of Mayors and others really participated in, and it's far more about sustainable development communities. And there's a community health domain, and FAB accreditation actually gains you points in that community health domain. That's probably way too, not remotely detailed enough to, but it's probably enough, I know enough to make me dangerous. So if you're interested in that, there's certainly more out there to learn. And Kay knows a lot more about it. But anyway, we also from CDC have been also looking at accreditation as something when we do workforce placement. So how many of you are familiar with the PHAP program, the Public Health Associate Program? Great. So that is a program. We just started our latest class with over 200 new associates. Not counting those that are already in the field. And so those are placements in health departments. And this year marked the first year that we prioritized host site applications for those that wanted an associate to help them with accreditation readiness work. So we do get a tremendous amount of host site applications, but if you wanted someone on accreditation readiness work, those were selected as long as they made even remote sense. Starting next year, and our colleagues at NCH with their EH internship program did this past year already, we're going to prioritize host sites that are actually already accredited too, acknowledging that these are great places. These are high performing health departments that really have their ducks in a row. And of course, Jessica already spoke about the QI Leaders Academy, and we know that different states have their different messages about accreditation. I've already talked a little about ASI, so I'll just skip over this. because I know we want to have time for discussion. So I'll leave you with these thoughts as we go into the more open dialogue time. As we think more about what kinds of incentives could exist, we really need to be focused on those that provide a benefit, but are not seen as negative for those that just aren't at that place. So they really need to be positive incentives, but you know, this is more about the carrot, not the stick, but also not anything that would exacerbate those differences between the high-performing health departments that are already at that place and those that just still have a little bit of that journey left to go. We are not the only ones from CDC that could provide incentives, so there are other federal agencies that can be in the mix, and of course states and other types of organizations. You already mentioned the STAR Community Rating Program as a good example, that I think we do need to think very creatively about this. So anyway, I wanted to end with throwing that question out there as part of our dialogue time, because that's our biggest area of keen interest. And I'll add that even, you know, Dr. Frieden and other leadership at CDC are really engaged in this conversation as well. So thank you.
Thank you.